Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Rick Leeson. Rick's been on the show before. Welcome, Rick.
Hi, Wayne. Thanks.
It's good to have you back. He's the founder and chief executive officer and chief investment officer of Frontier Advisors, an investment management firm in McLean, Virginia, committed to finding the most effective way for investors to engage the global economy through their investment portfolios. Rick has worked as an analyst and portfolio manager at some of the industry's best-known firms, and he has experience across asset classes, investment strategies, and research methodologies. Rick received his bachelor's degree in international relations from the U.S. Air Force Academy, his master's degree in international economic policy from Columbia University, and is a certified financial analyst charter holder. As a former professor at the U.S. Air Force Academy, Rick is dedicated to informing others about the art, science, and business of investing, and it's in this capacity that we've invited him back to Blueprint for Wealth. So here we go. Here we are, 4 years or so into a financial crisis. Rick, what do investors need to know?
Well, that's the $64 million question, I guess. There are more things for people to know now than I think we have time for on the show, but we'll give it a crack here.
Take your time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got 15 minutes and everybody's anxious to hear what we should have learned from the crisis, but what should we expect in the future too?
Well, what I'm telling people now, there's three main things that we really need to have gotten our arms around.
Okay.
Since this thing blew up on us, 2007, 2008, 2009. And if you think back another 10 years, we learned similar lessons or should have learned the same things back during the tech bubble. But so the three things that I'll put out there for everybody today, and hopefully this will be of some help, is that the first one is that the financial industry is on its own side. It's not on the side of investors, no matter what people think. There's a lot of people out there that will tell you that we are on your side, we're on the same side of the table as you, and in most cases, that's mostly correct. The way our industry works, we've got registered investment advisory firms, and those firms do have a fiduciary responsibility to their clients, and that responsibility requires them to act in the best interest of their clients over their own interest.
Okay.
So in that case, there is a legal requirement that they do act in their client's interest first. But I'll get to a nuance of that that keeps them still on the other side of the table. And then the other side of the industry is really acting in its own interest. If you think about the investment banks and the Goldman Sachs of the world, if you think about any IPO, Facebook's a great example. Some of the other previous IPOs.
What a great example.
It's hard to figure out who they're helping the most. And the real answer is they're helping themselves the most.
Sure.
Goldman Sachs was, by the way, it's Morgan Stanley was the main underwriter on that one, not to confuse anybody. But I think about Goldman is because they tend to be held up as the main example of investment banking these days. And you think about the brokerage industry, those folks that are managing people's money. Now, if you want to, juxtapose them against registered investment advisory firms, they don't have a fiduciary responsibility, at least not yet. We're trying to, there's legislation put forth regularly to try and get that to happen, but that's probably going to be a while before, if ever it happens. Anyway, they don't have a fiduciary responsibility. They just have to make sure that the investments they're putting people in are suitable.
Right.
And so there's all kinds of ways that conflicts of interest can evolve out of that kind of a relationship.
What does it mean to be suitable? I mean, when you talk about a suitable investment versus having a fiduciary duty to put, to represent the best interests of the client.
Well, a good example might be if you've got an elderly person who doesn't need a tremendous amount of growth out of their portfolio, and this person puts them in a lot of high octane equity investments or risky strategies, that's probably not suitable.
Okay.
So if held to the fire, they'd have to really bend over backwards to explain why that's suitable, or they could face legal action, I suppose.
Okay.
But to get back to the RIA world, the registered investment advisory world, there's something that a lot of people don't talk about, and that is on the issue of fees. RIA firms are fiduciarily on the other side of the table from their clients, because if you think about it, their fiduciary responsibility is to maximize risk-adjusted returns. At least that's my way of putting it. Maximize risk-adjusted returns for their clients.
Okay.
Or let's just assume that's the goal here.
All right.
But if you're going to be charging fees from your client, every dollar they pay you in fees is going to be a dollar that reduces the return on that portfolio.
Right.
So inherently, you have this conflict of interest between the two. And so arguably the RIA's fiduciary responsibilities to keep fees as low as possible. Nobody's presenting that the fiduciary needs to be doing anything for free. Obviously, we're all in this for to make money. But when people start charging 1, 1.5, 2% in fees, there better be a justification for those high fee levels.
Right.
And, of course, they'll sit there and tell you the whole time that there is justification. They'll go ahead and make more for you in return on that. But I think as an investor, you ought to require them to demonstrate that.
Okay.
And that means accurate measurement tools, and it gets pretty complicated pretty quickly when
you're
trying to explain
all the different fees that these registered investment advisors are taking and the fund managers are taking and the mutual funds are taking. It becomes almost impossible to understand.
Well, and you add it all up and it becomes closer to 3.5%, maybe even over 4%, depending on the kinds of strategies you're in. So, you know, I haven't found a money manager in my experience in the industry, including myself, that's able to outperform whatever benchmark they're trying to outperform in the area of 3, 4, 5% year in and year out.
Okay.
So it becomes a difficult thing for to understand how these people charge what they do. So that's the big one. First of all, understand that the financial industry is out for itself, not for its clients, first and foremost.
Okay.
The second lesson I think people need to understand is that people who sound like they know what's going to happen usually don't.
What do you mean by that?
Well, so you turn on CNBC and they've always got somebody on there.
Kramer
or, you know, anytime you turn it on, doesn't matter whether you're looking in the noon hour where they're talking to traders or in the morning where they've got some market guru on there, a Bill Gross, a Muhammad El-Arian, whoever the person is they've got on for the day.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about what is going to happen in either the economy, the markets, whatever the case is. And they're really good at sounding like they know what they're talking about. And they do know the ins and outs of the business. They know the economy. They know the markets, whatever it is they're speaking about. But the way they present their opinion, it sounds very factual and very predictive. But there's a lot of studies out there where from academia, right, where these objective academics are looking at the market gurus, the market strategists, economists, whoever it is they're looking at, and they take a look at their predictions. And they take a look at how their predictions pan out over time, and they find out that their ability to predict the future is oftentimes no better and many times worse than flipping a coin or talking to the layman on the street that knows very little about the subject.
Okay.
So be very careful about who you listen to and who you get advice from, and more importantly, how that advises your actions going forward.
Don't rely on somebody who's basically saying that the future will be something.
That's basically what you're saying.
Okay.
And always think about the opposite side, because just after that really smart person's talking on that issue, somebody else can talk about the opposite side of the same issue and sound just as good arguing that position.
Sure. You just get a good orator, a good person who can be persuasive in their speech, and their opinion now becomes fact.
Especially if they're talking about a subject that you're not necessarily an expert in. It's very easy to be snowed over by somebody who just knows a little bit more than you do about it.
Sure, sure.
Okay, so the third lesson I think we need to have learned is that bigger and more complex isn't necessarily a good thing.
Okay.
And we can go a number of different directions on this, but bigger, think mostly about firm size. In the investment industry, bigger tends to mean you've got access to more investment products, more research, more analysts, more tools. And while all that's true, you've got access, in many cases that's true, not a whole lot of that necessarily adds value. So to think that a firm that has 300 analysts is better than a firm that only has 10, well, you might want to think again, have them prove that those 300 analysts are actually generating or adding value to whatever it is they're doing for you. More strategies. That's often not the case. Now the investment industry has evolved in such a way that even the smallest of firms can compete with the biggest firms in terms of trading capability, in terms of tools, access to research, access to strategies. And so you can get all the same stuff through a small firm as you can through a large firm. But when you go to a bigger firm, now you're talking about firms that get involved in so many different things. There are so many different risks available to whatever it is they're doing. Just take a look at the big banks that are out there. Look at a Citigroup. Look at a Bank of America. Look at UBS. Look at all of these banks that also have their brokerage side.
Right.
And they've all been involved in massive fraud, massive illegality to the sum of tens of billions of dollars in fines over the last decade or so.
Right.
And that's taken us through the last two crises. There isn't a single one. JP Morgan, too.
Just recently. Yeah.
Every one of them has been involved in something massive and been fined significantly for it. Is it because they're big? They're small firms getting into problems, too.
Sure.
But the point is, just because it's big, it doesn't necessarily mean it's safe.
So it adds cost, too.
And it adds a ton of cost. There's a lot of overhead to run these big firms. And then you take this thought into the complexity issue. Well, what got us into the trouble in the first place? CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, credit default swaps, complex ways of hedging risk or amplifying returns.
All for fees for the big organizations.
They're all very complex to the point where they don't understand them. JP Morgan's the latest great example, and you brought them
up.
To maybe $5 billion. We'll see how much it costs in the end.
Yeah.
But it's, and Jamie Dimon himself said we poorly executed trades that we didn't fully understand and had exposures we didn't understand. It was just dumb. And you know, if J.P. Morgan, who's held out there as the smartest, the best, the brightest, the most ethical, etc., can't do it, well, everybody should question it.
So we're talking with Rick Leeson of Frontier Advisors. Rick, having learned all these lessons, these three major lessons, and they're very hard lessons to learn, what do you do from here? Where does one go?
Well, so you can look at those three pieces, three lessons, and sort of, I guess it's kind of obvious what the advice is. So in terms of viewing the financial industry as on its own side and not yours, we've got to treat everybody with extreme skepticism. So I hate to tell investors out there or people that need help in this area, but you've got to, at least when you're hiring a person, become an analyst. And you've got to think through a lot of different questions and force whoever it is you're considering hiring to explain what the benefits are for all the fees that they're going to charge you, and to force them to prove their capabilities and their credibilities. Don't hire them just because you like them.
Would it be good to get references on these people?
Absolutely.
Doing your due diligence?
Well, but think about references too in the job market, right? If you're applying for a position, you're only going to give references who are going to sing your praises.
Right.
So it's the same thing out there. That doesn't mean don't get them, but interview the references as much as hard as you would interview that firm. And the key is just don't hire somebody because they're your golf buddy or they put on a good dinner or they seem very likable. Everybody in this industry is, by and large, likable.
So who do you hire? I mean, how do you make a decision about hiring?
Well, you've got to look at who's doing the work for you. Take a look at their educational expertise. Take a look at their business expertise. Try and understand what their motivation is in performing the services you're hiring them to perform. Ask them how they're getting paid. Ask them how they're getting paid specifically by you. Ask them what fees that you're going to be charged. And what you'll find is you start asking these questions, most of them can't even answer them. They don't know how the fee that you're getting charged from them is arrived at, and they certainly don't know how that filters into their pocket. And if they do, they're going to have a hard time explaining it to you because it gets very complicated.
Sure. So we've got about a minute and a half left. What thoughts would you like to leave the listeners with today?
Well, so we've got all these lessons. We've got ways to think about it. I guess the big picture is understand that risk and return are joined at the hip. We haven't gotten into this a whole lot today, but it truly is. You've got to think about all the risks. You got to think about all the returns. Don't listen to somebody who's telling you they can get you a certain amount of return with very little risk, because that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Think long term. You've got to be investing for the long term. Don't speculate. Don't try and figure out what the market's going to do over the next 6 or 12 months. Nobody could tell you, and you can't figure it out and avoid a bus coming down the other side of the street. You've got to think long term and not worry about the short term. But also be confident that markets do reward people over long periods of time, as long as you embrace what they're trying to do, which is grow. Markets and economies are out there every day simply growing.
Rick, how can people get in touch with you at Frontier Advisors if they want to learn more about your services?
Well, you can go to our website. It's Frontier Advisors with an O, LLC.com. You can give me a call anytime, 703-634-9556.
Rick Leeson, thank you for being such an honest and forthright guest on Blueprint for Wealth today.
Anytime, Wayne.
And we'll have you back to tell us some more about things that we should know. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth. We really appreciate your patronage, and please join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.